I said something to Steve Sunday morning before he got up to preach. I said, isn't it nice to be preceding Bill instead of following Bill? He said, well, I've done both, but yeah, preceding is better. I didn't think about that, but yeah, now look who's following Bill. So anyhow, that was not too good. All right. We'll be in 2 Kings chapter 5 mostly tonight. We got just a little bit at the end of chapter 4, one little story to finish up. So we'll get that. And then move into the story of Naaman, which is the very familiar thing we'll talk about most of the time tonight. So to kind of catch up with where we are, Jehoram, we got Jehoram in both places now. Remember that? We got Jehoram in Israel and Jehoram in Judah, both kings named Jehoram as we start off here. And Jehoram in Judah, God, because of his disobedience, strikes him with this disease of the bowels. And the last 2 years, his bowels come out. It's just an agonizing type death, apparently. And he dies, and they bury him in the city of David, but not in the tomb of the kings. And no one cared. No one cared that he died. The actual quote is, he departed without being desired. Nobody cared about that. And even the good people were glad he's gone. Because the good people want this evil influence, of course, comes from Ahab and Jezebel, want him out of their life. He succeeded then by his son Ahaziah. We've already had Ahaziah in Israel before Jehoram, his brother. Now we've got Ahaziah reigning over in Judah as well. Then we turn most of our attention recently to the stories, the narratives around Elisha. We looked at three of them last time. We'll get those on the screen just in a minute. Elisha, of course, starts up when Elijah is taken into heaven in the whirlwind. Best timing seems to be about the time that Ahaziah ended and Jehoram started in Israel. Both those, of course, sons of Ahab and Jezebel. Goes on for several kings, but in a lot of things about Elisha, the king is not specifically named. It may say the king or it doesn't name who the king was specifically. And there's no way to know that all these stories fit, you know, one after the other. They go almost like boom, 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 but there's no way to know that they really happen like the next day, or the next week or whatever. So it's kind of like, here's all the stories about Elisha, a bunch of them kind of put together. So not necessarily in chronological order. But last time we looked at three of them, talked about them. Elisha with the widow's oil, remember, she had debts to pay, and they're going to come take her sons to be slaves to pay the debts. And Elisha asked her what she had. She said, I've got a jar of oil. He said, go gather all the pots that you can, all the vessels you can, and go in and shut the door, you and your son, start pouring the oil out. And she did, and the pots, she just kept filling the pots up, filling them up. And Elisha told her, go sell that, pay your debtor, and then you and your son live off of what's left. And then the Shunammite woman, of course, Elisha had been passing through. She'd been feeding him. They built this room on the top of the house, the roof for him to stay in when he was passing through there. And he wanted to give her something in return. And she said, I don't need anything. And so Gehazi recognized the fact she did not have a son. So Elisha told her a year from now, you will have a son. She did. The child got older. Complained of his head hurting and died. And then she ran to Elisha, ran and found him and brought him back. And Elisha goes through working, of course, with God's power and raises the boy from the dead, presents him back to his mother. And before she even takes the child, she falls down at his feet in gratitude, thanking him for what he had done for her. And then the other one was a little short one there when the sons of the prophets were together. And they were hungry. Elisha told them to put on a pot of stew. Well, the man goes out and he gathers off of a vine some gourds, comes back, slices it up into stew, not knowing it was both poisonous and bitter. And Elisha takes some meal of flour and puts it in the pot, tells him to eat it and all be well. And it healed the pot is the word that's used there. So those are three we talked about last time. And I don't know if any of these things you can relate to in your personal life. I was talking to one of you, I won't say who it was, last Sunday morning after service. That person said, you know, and mentioned one of these particular stories. I can really, really relate to that because of something that's going on in my life right now. And it really meant something to me to apply that same principle to what's going on in my life. So think about these things as we go through them. Don't let us be fairy tales. See what you can get out of it. What would help us as we think about our lives, our relationship to God as we go through these stories. Okay. Tonight, 2 Kings 4, like the very end of it, verse 42, and then we'll go through 5 and get into 6 as the time goes on here. Mostly more stories about Elisha tonight. A little bit besides that. All right, we're going to start off here in Gilgal. We've been there before. Of course, this is the Benjamin Plateau area where we talked so much before about when King Saul was here in his territory. Here's Jerusalem, Dead Sea. It's Gilgal down next to the Jordan River here. And while we're here, I want to point out two other places. We'll get to them a little bit later. Dothan and Samaria. Samaria, of course, being the capital of Israel. And the city of Dothan we'll get to if we get time right at the end of the lesson here tonight. And we'll talk about Dothan a little bit. But tonight, start off with, we're in Gilgal. So, Elisha's there with the sons of the prophet. And a man comes in and he has 20 barley loaves. Now, we don't know how big a loaf was or how much bread 20 barley loaves would be. But Elisha told him to take the 20 barley loaves and go feed the sons of the prophets who were there. And he said, there's 100 men here. There's not enough food here to feed 100 men. Not enough bread for that. And Elisha says, feed them, let them eat, and you'll have food left over. And I can't help but say that reminds us of what? And 4,000. Both cases. There was not enough food in either time of Jesus feeding the 4,000 or the 5,000. Not enough food there to feed the multitude that was there. Not enough food here to feed this 100 people. But in all three cases, there was food left over because of what God did. Okay. And we'll talk about that a little bit more at the end if we have some time. So now we move into the story of Naaman. Very familiar story with Naaman and his leprosy. So let's run through the narrative on that, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But Naaman is a great man in Syria. Now remember Syria, if you look at the map, it's off up to the right, across the Jordan River, up past the Sea of Galilee, way up to the right, Damascus to be in the capital. Naaman's commander in the Syrian army. He's a mighty warrior. And there's one phrase used in that first verse that we might kind of skip over a little bit. Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, a great and honorable man in the eyes of his master, was a great warrior. And because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. Look at the word Lord there. How's it written in your text? All caps. Okay. Generally, in most ways, translated in most texts. Indicating, who is that? It's Jehovah. Okay. So Jehovah has given Naaman victory. Who's Naaman fighting for? Syria. Okay. Not one of God's nations. So, don't know who all he's given victory to. We do know that Syria had come in and defeated Israel at times, punishment for their wickedness by God. But just a little phrase there that kind of catches your attention to think about it. Jehovah giving Naaman victories? He's fighting for Syria? Not something we would think about. What's going through there? Mighty man of valor, but he was a leper. Okay. Leprosy, a dreaded disease. Go back earlier to the time of the children of Israel, and they put them outside the camp. very contagious. In fact, you kind of wonder how, if Naaman has that, how he's associating with the king of Syria, as we talked about a little later. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Why was he around him so much? If it's such a contagious type thing, it's an infectious disease of the skin, and damages the nerves in the skin, and it will actually lead to gangrene and deformity if it's not, you know, not treated or healed. And then, of course, no cure for it. Don't know of, as we read about it in the Old Testament times there. So it's a very, very, very dreaded disease. So you see why when this, what we're about to come up with and talk about possibly being healed, why everybody do anything you could to get healed of that. It's a terrible, terrible disease. So on one of the raids into Israel that the Syrian army had made, they had captured this young maiden. And she was a servant to Naaman's wife. And so she told her master about this prophet in Israel that could heal Naaman. Well, as you think about it, going from her to the wife, to Naaman, to the king, things get a little bit mixed up. Naaman tells the Syrian king about it, and the Syrian king says, okay, I'll send you down to the king of Israel and request he heal you. And he sends all these great gifts down with him, significant gifts, because Naaman's an important man in Syria, and the king of Syria wants to get the king of Israel to heal it. Now, here's what the letter says. When you get this letter, I've sent you Naaman, my servant, heal him of his leprosy. Well, the king of Israel, again, it's one of those unnamed kings. I don't know which one it is. But the king of Israel gets this and says, wait a minute. My God. I get to make decisions on who lives, dies, to heal. Of leprosy? I can't heal anybody from leprosy. What are you trying to do? Pick a fight with me? You trying to pick a fight with me? So he takes it as an insult type thing. You know, you're just making fun of me. I can't heal leprosy. So, okay, the story got a little mixed up from the time that the Israelite captive young lady had told her master, her, and then to Naaman, to the king, and then back down. So, two kings are about to, they're on the same page for this thing here. Well, Elisha hears about it. And he sends word and says, let him come to me. He'll know the prophet in Israel. And we've seen that expression multiple times. This will happen that you'll know there's a prophet or a God in Israel. It's in that same phrase used a number of times. So, Naaman goes over to Elisha's house. Now, from all of the reading, he's got some entourage with him. We don't know how many, but chariots there, horses. I mean, it's plurals mentioned several times there. It's not just like Naaman's, you know, one little guy riding a donkey going over there. He's an important guy. He pulls up in front of Elisha's house, and normally somebody would come out to a dignitary like that and be glad to see him, and would greet him and make something special out of it. Elisha didn't come out of his house. There's a messenger out. And what's worse than that, than to send the messenger out, what did he tell him to do? Go down to the Jordan River. Go to the Jordan River. Now, that would not be just, you know, like over the next block. It's some distance to travel to go to the Jordan River from where they were. Go to the Jordan River and dip in the river seven times. You'll be clean. Pretty simple. But Naaman was furious. And the words used here just stagger you when you think about them. Indeed, I said to myself, what's he saying? I thought, now, either because of who he was, this dignitary, or because of what it was he had to have done, whatever reason. Well, I thought, I said to myself, here's how it's going to happen. Well, I should him come out. He sends his servant, Hazel, out and says, by the way, go down to that muddy Jordan River. Around the Jordan River and dip yourself 7 times in there. And when you come out, you'll be clean. So, he's ready to head home. After all, we got rivers up in Damascus that are much better than the Jordan River. Some of his servants seem to have a little cooler head than what Naaman did. They say to him, my father, my lord, they greeted him. If this prophet told you to do something really complex and complicated and special, you'd have done it, right? Why don't you do this simple thing? Okay. I was worried when he says this, man, dip my river 7 times and you'll be clean. They're trying to contrast the seriousness of this leprosy with the simplicity of what he said, do to get rid of it. You thought it'd be something great and fancy, something. If you told you to do that, you know, you'd have done it. But it's just simple. You got this leprosy. Do this and get rid of it. So he does. Changes his mind. And if somebody got to you with, you had leprosy, they said, look, this is all it's going to take to get the leprosy gone. It's that serious that you do. Okay. So he goes down and dips in the Jordan River 7 times according to the saying of a man of God. Doing what God has said to you. And the results were? His flesh is like that little child. Totally cleansed his flesh. Now, put yourself in Naaman's spot. You just came up from that 7 time dipping in that Jordan River, and you look at your flesh. How are you feeling right now? How are you feeling right now? Ready to go home to Syria and shout, yes, yes, yes. What he did. First, he recognized where it came from. Now I know there's no God. Listen to that. Look at that. There's no God on all the earth except in Israel. What's Naaman used to worshiping back in Damascus? Idols. Idols. Had idols cleansed his leprosy? There's no God in all the earth except this God in Israel. He doesn't go home. But Jesus healed the 10 lepers. What did 9 of them do? Kept going. Look, one of the priests, I understand that, killed himself. One of them came back. What does Naaman do? He goes back to find Elisha. He's not going to say thank you. What's he got for him? He got gifts. Apparently, significant gifts. They already brought significant gifts to the king of Israel. Elisha refuses the gift. Why? I don't know. Any number of reasons that you think can come out. Read some of the commentators about it. There's various reasons given. He didn't want to be an obligation to Naaman that, you know, I bought my cleansing. There's any number of reasons, but Elisha refuses the gifts. Totally. And Naaman does something that's much more strange to us. He wants 2 mule loads of dirt to take back with him to Damascus to build an altar with, to have a place to build an altar. Now, what's special about the dirt in Israel? Well, nothing really. Dirt on the whole earth belongs to thank God. He created all of it, right? But Naaman felt so special about this, what had happened to him in Israel. no God except in Israel. He wanted to stay back with him. And he said, I will not sacrifice to any other God except Jehovah. Now, Amos got a very unusual situation to deal with when he gets back. Let's go to verse 18. We're going to talk about that. Well, I thought I'd change that around. One more time. There we go. Yeah. Let's get Gehazi first. We're going to go get that done. All right. Elisha had refused the gifts. Gehazi said, it's pretty nice stuff there. So he goes and chases down Naaman as he leaves. And he approaches the chariots, and Naaman sees him. He stops, gets down, says, everything okay? It's all well? And he said, well, there was two of the sons of the prophet that came to visit my master, and he asked if he would send two changes of garments back to him and two talents of silver. You know, Naaman had it up. He didn't just give it to him. He has his servants take it back for him. He says, I guess back. Naaman says, Elisha says, where you been? Like so often happens, one wrong brings on what? Another wrong. What'd you do to him? Lies. I've been anywhere. And because of this, the leprosy was on Naaman. It's on Gehazi and his descendants. Watch that. All right. Back up here at this one point. Right. My scripture's lit here, right there. Go back to Naaman. And he bought this dirt. Got this dirt to take back. And he said, I will sacrifice to no other gods. If I get back, I'm not going to worship that idol. So I've been worshiping. Because what? There's no God except in the land of Israel. Naaman's got this circumstance to deal with. Let's put on down. Verse 18 is what we're going to look at. So if you got your text open there, look at 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 18. Let's read it. And then I've done this two or three times with other people now. I've asked Jeff to talk about this a minute here. Look at this verse. Yet in this thing may the Lord pardon your servant. Well, the Lord is Jehovah again. They all caps there. In this thing, what he's about to talk about. May the Lord pardon your servant. When my master, the king of Syria, my master the king goes into the temple of Rimmon to worship there. And he leans on my hand, which I'm right there with him, and I bow down in the temple of Rimmon. When I bow down in the temple of Rimmon, may the Lord, Jehovah, please pardon your servant in this thing. What's he saying? What's he saying? Jeff, I got your slide next if you want it. Okay.
So, how
Right here, right there. Back up and run through those again. I'm on the slide Jeff was talking. What did he say the king would expect me to do? He expected me to go into the temple with him, right there beside him, like I always have, and be there with the idols. So, is he saying this to Elisha to say, can I have your permission to go in with the king? I mean, that's what I'm expected to do. I mean, he's my boss. He's my king. So is he asking permission to go in with him? Now, would that be a sin to go into the temple of the idols? From the very appearance of evil, and that's certainly evil he's going back into here. I certainly believe what Jeff said. He's a totally changed man now. There's no God except in Israel. I won't worship any God except that. Put the dirt back with him, offer these gifts. So is he trying to get permission from Elisha before he goes back, knowing what he's got to do? Like Jeff said, Elisha doesn't say, okay, that's all right. I understand. You got to learn some things. Or he doesn't say, no, sir. You can't go back and do that. You got to change jobs. You got to do any of that. It's just go in peace. So my question I put up here was, how would you answer a new, young convert? Maybe still living at home. Maybe attending with some of our young folks. Where he got to spend some deep studying and was converted. Became a true Christian. And asked about going back to with their parents to the denomination worship. How do you answer? You see a parallel somewhat with this here? How you gonna deal with that? Like Jeff said, that's happened. That's not a made up story. That's truly happens. We have to be very careful. All of us know that. You come down to a person and say, no, you must absolutely not do that. Your parents are in deep sin. And what are you going to do to them? Some of the things you say, oh, yeah, that's okay. I understand. Go ahead. There'll be no problem with that. Well, what have you done then? That's fine with you. A little quarter of there doesn't say lesson like I usually put up there. It's just thoughts. Something you think about. How would you deal with this? And how does this verse apply to that? All right. Let's move on. It's something the same thing. I'll just leave that hanging out there if you think about it a little bit. All right. Another story here from Elisha. Floating accent, real short. He was with the sons of the prophets, and they had outgrown where they were staying, where they were living. And they said, let's go out to Jordan and cut some trees and build some new quarters to live in here. And they asked Elisha to go with them, and he does. And they're cutting the trees, and one man shouts out, says, oh, me, about my axe head. It's come off the axe, off of the handle here, and it was a borrowed axe. And what's an axe head? What's an iron going to do when it gets that water? It's been gone. Okay. Last time you saw it. Elisha comes up, asks him, says, where did it go in? Tells him, and he cuts a stick. No magic stick. He cuts a stick, goes in the water. The axe head floats. He tells him to go get it. significance of that? It's this. It's just a faith-building thing for these sons of the prophet. To see God work through the life. That's it. It's a very little short story. Alright, let's move on into the next chapter now. We're going to look a little bit in there to talk about. We'll go back with Syria now and we can talk about war, some rage now. So there's no indication necessarily that this follows right back when Naaman had come into Israel and been healed and goes right back to Israel and has a war. There's nothing to say the timeline fits. These stories are all several of them compacted together where this fits in the thing again. We don't know exactly. But the kings aren't mentioned there. We can't get a true timeline of what it is. But every time the king of Syria would bring his forces into Israel and camp in such and such space, Elisha would go tell the king of Israel where they were. To the point that, and it's always right, to the point that the king of Syria said, "We got a spy. We got somebody, a traitor in our camp here. Somebody is telling Israel what's going on every time we go into battle. They're getting a message out, and they're telling the Israelites what's going on here." And lots of you would think that. Now, he finds out that Elisha's one's doing this. And I told you about I'm going to watch for Dothan. Here's Dothan here. It's a little hard to see this mountain. I did that because I want to get Syria up here. So here's Syria, here's Damascus. So they're way up here, coming down into, and Dothan's here, Samaria, the capital of Israel's here. So they come down to Dothan and get the proximity of these two here. That's 10 miles right there, first little bit. So you're talking about, 15 miles, maybe 12, 15 miles from Dothan to Syria. I'll mention Samaria. So king of Syria sends in his army, large army. The Dothan, it's where he's found out that Elisha is. And he surrounds it. And he surrounds the city. Black lines up there. And Elisha's servant. Now, I mean, it's a time and again. Who's Elisha's servant? Well, Gehazi, we say was, okay. Maybe he is at this point. We don't know. The timing doesn't fit in here necessarily. Or maybe Elisha's got another servant. We just don't know those things, okay? And the servant sees this massive army out there. Elisha tells him, "No, those with us are more than those that are with them." And I'm sure the servant's saying, did I hear that right? Type thing. Because obviously what he's saying, that's not true. It's just a massive Syrian army out there. Elisha prays to God and says, "Open his eyes so he can see. Open his eyes and let him see not what's really out there. Let him see that you're out there." When he does, he sees the mountains full of horses and chariots of fire. There to protect him. God's army's out there. And yes, those of us are more than those that are with them. As the army approaches, Elisha prays again and says, "Ask God to strike him with blindness." And he does. And so, the army blind, they take and they lead them and said they're going to lead them back out. They take them down to Samaria. Now Samaria is the capital of Israel. Who's going to be there? Well, the king and all the powerhouse of Israel is going to be there. That's where they lead them to. And when they get there inside the city of Samaria, their eyes are opened, and what's the king of Israel going to do to them? "This is my enemy, right? I'm going to kill him." But Elisha says, no. Feed them bread and water. And send them home. Ooh, I'm sorry. That's why I messed up your recording. I bumped the mic too many times. feed them and send them home. Why? I don't know. Before one time, remember the story when, was it Ahab? They let the king go. And God got onto him because he shouldn't have done that. Here, it's about the opposite. Here he says, he's lost his sense of hope. Was it because of this act of kindness or what? That Assyria has not come back for a long, long time. Back here for again. Okay, a couple of thoughts about this. We'll go through it. Back to the story about feeding the 100 men with 20 loaves here. Then they eat and have some left. Why should we be surprised at that? Why should we be surprised? Look at some of these verses. Back in Genesis 18 about Sarah having a son. Is he anything too hard for the Lord? Is he anything God can't do? Where did all this stuff come from? God made it all, right? Like stealing the storm on the Sea of Galilee. That's a bunch of S's. Stealing the storm. Why should we be surprised that God can steal the storm? Who made all the nature to start with? Jeremiah 32, same thing. You think too hard for the Lord? A couple of passages in Luke. That is impossible for God. And I put those verses in tonight. I got to thinking. I thought of one passage that says there's something impossible for God to do. What is that? Lie. Hebrews 6, 18. God can't lie. So when I put the verses up there, I said, if nothing, you know, God, nothing's impossible. I understand what that says. That verse did pop in my mind. God can't lie. All right, another one. But he told him to go wash the Jordan River 7 times. Okay? Complicated? Hard? Gonna cleanse your leprosy? No, I don't think so. I mean, why would it? I mean, what's magic about that water? Jordan River, what's it gonna do to it? Kind of strange way to heal leprosy, right? We'll get in the Jordan River 7 times. Any special power in that water? What if he gone back to Damascus like he started to and dipped the water up there? Well, what God said to do? Got obedience. Okay? What did Mark 16:16 say? Isn't the magic in this big tub of water up here? Yeah, we all know this. Seems like a very strange way, though, to be saved from our sins, right? You go up here and get all wet in this big tub of water. No matter. What God say do? That's what. That's what he said do. So, don't get rid of leprosy, Naaman. Don't leprosy gone? Do what? Go get back to the Jordan River. Can we save our sins? Do what? Be baptized. It's that simple. It's not hard. We're trying to make it hard. Some people try to make it hard. And then this point here about, I thought it'd be like this. Who knows? Who knows? It's not the way a man to direct his own path. Who knows? God knows. Who tells us what to do? God does. Romans 10 says, be ignorant of God's righteousness. We try to do what? We try to set up our own way of being righteous. We've got to do what? We've got to submit to the righteousness of God. Not what I thought. What did God say? And then one more. Gehazi wanting the gifts. My dad, some of you knew him years ago, not an educated man, served as an elder for one of the churches here in the county a number of years. He used to tell me many years ago his opinion, one word to describe what was the worst thing about this world we're living in right now, with this word, greed. Everybody wants. I want. I want. I want. That was his thing. There's too many passages about covetousness. I want. I want. What did it cost Gehazi? At least two things. I said, leprosy for one. And who's he associated with before this? God's prophet. Greed. Be careful, always. Materialism, another word for it. I won't. Well, easy way to get quick. Get rich quick, right? It's not because something's not working. Some person not working, you know, or probably not working. Okay, comments? Somebody. Okay, it's time for the bell. Where's Dennis? That clock says a minute past time. Dennis is never late, so sorry. All right, thanks.